It has been three terrific years. This little country has played a smart defensive game, sometimes even carrying the ball across the 50-yard line. But each time the Soviets have called timeout and sent in a new team, and with each team, better and better players. Last week, she sent in her first string, and the war went into the last quarter. I have just returned from a fight unto death in the South. It is desperate. The Red Army is desperate to end it all, and the things that it should not be. All day, all night, artillery whines and crashes, with machine and rifle fire carrying the melody. Constantly the ground shakes as the big shells flutter and explosion, throwing up deep dirt, leaves, branches, smearing the white snow. Constantly the staccato bark of the machine gun reveals a hot spot on the line, and the clean crack of the rifle is support. Out there it is war. We know it, we see it. And yet at times it is not. How can it be? The northern winter has painted a forest more beautiful than words can tell. It is as though an artist with tremendous capacities, armed with an airbrush, has had his fling. The sun has come now, longer and brighter each day, and if you hold your ears, look one way, not another, make believe just a little bit, Finland is as Finland was, a country of the gods. But war is still war, and reality returns quickly. It did today. I had climbed the tower of the Hotel Torni in Helsinki as the air sirens sent a stirring feeling deep inside of me. It always does. There are safer places in Helsinki, but none better to make pictures from. Day after day, we have had alarms. Last week, one day brought seven. They sprang us out of bed in the morning and kept at us until midnight. It is threat after threat, but no bombs. It's a war of nerves. It makes all of Finland the war front. There's no getting used to it. There's no ignoring it. One day, each of us is convinced they'll empty hell on us. Today was no different. I looked up into the brilliant blue that has come with the beginning of spring here. Visibility unlimited. Your eyes strain. The wind cuts them. Your ears play tricks. Then the plane. They're high. You cannot see them, but the droning grows louder and louder, penetrating, almost hypnotic. It comes from all directions. You judge the light and adjust your camera automatically. Unconsciously, you pull your steel helmet down over your fur hat. It is really useless, but it gives a comforting feeling. Then you see the plane. Three silver crosses caught in the sun's rays. Then three more, and three more. They are fighters in good formation, roving at 15,000 feet. The anti-aircraft batteries have found them now, and deep booms echo over the city. Dirty brown bursts paint the sky about the planes, and the falling shrapnel of the anti-aircraft shells splatter the city. The planes break formation, split apart. Some glide away, some drive into the brown patches, which are spreading slowly and hang like parachutes in the blue. Overhead they come, and the anti-aircraft follows them. You duck a little bit, even though you know it will do no good. Now the silver crosses turn southward and head for the Bay of Finland, roaring towards Estonia. You watch them high in the sky until suddenly you have lost them. When the all-clear sounds, the people on the streets below climb out of their ground holes like ants and pick up their duties where they left off until the next raid. Yesterday I returned from Viipuri. I have been there many times during this war, but this last visit was the most dramatic, and probably the last I or any other correspondent will make. Completely evacuated by all save a few of the military, this second city of Finland has taken a terrific pounding. Block after block of homes and shops has been leveled by air and artillery bombardment. Street after street is nightmarishly silent, with not even a cat or a dog about. It is as though a wand had been waved and all life removed. It is eerie to walk through the streets, and sometimes the hair on the back of your neck pushes against your fur hat as you turn from one empty street to the next. The shops with their smashed windows, blasted outside, hold all kinds of prizes, and you can enter and handle them. Open jaws, try on hats, wander through a fully stocked bookshop, if the desire to get out into the sunlight does not overcome you too soon. Each creak of a hanging board and each scrape of a piece of shell-torn, jagged tin is a plane overhead, or yes, a Russian, for we are not very far now from the Soviet line. As for the destruction of this great Finnish city, the attitude of the entire country is best told in the words of a schoolgirl at Sortavala a few weeks ago. As a Lutta, she was carrying out her duties in a tiny shelter hidden well under the city. It was the nerve center directing the defense of the area. The bombardment was in the heaviest in the war. At noon, the girl got a report that another flight of Soviet planes was coming over the city. This time, there was 90 of them in formation. Soon, the detonation shook us in the shelter. If there was a direct hit, we were through. We sat in silence, except for the telephonic report revealing bombings all over the city. Then came a lull. The girl sat back and looked at me. "It looks like the end of Sortavala," I said. She shrugged and then answered, "The Russians have destroyed Sortavala 3 times in the past century, and each time we have rebuilt it better."
We have just heard the American correspondent Carl Maidan's photo-reporter of Life magazine. He has been talking to you over the nuclear broadcasting system from Helsinki, Finland. We now return you to America.